Wales. Wearing a mask is no longer mandatory in Quebec, except on public transit, in healthcare facilities, and in the days following your isolation period if you had COVID-19. Feel free to keep wearing one if you feel the need, and do it with a smile. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
C. K. K.
U.
T. T. 90.3 FM.
Another reliable communication channel.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. Yes, yes, we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and this month, the month of May, here at Soul P, we are dedicating every show to a variety of mothers, different backgrounds, different types of moms. And with us this evening is one of my moms. Because anybody who knows me knows that I have two moms, and her name is Paula Ferguson. She's been an entrepreneur since 1992, creating a gift company called Because Gifts and Gourmet, because she wanted something creative to do after having left her 9-to-5 job at Century National Bank. She joined my father, Peter Ferguson, managing photo workshop production, and worked in production, craft services, food styling, and publication coordination for a magazine that they started together called Chris Magazine. She also started a business for a short period of time called Details Production Agency, where they offered training seminars, public relations, and facilitated corporate businesses' needs. Later on, they started a business at the airport called Two Hampers and a Muse, and that's a retail business at Norman Manley International Airport. And along with my dad, Peter Ferguson, they started Studio Art Gallery together. She, over the course of being an entrepreneur, oh yes, also the Because Gifts and Gourmet got a little facelift in the early to mid-2000s, and it is now known as All Wrapped Up Jamaica. She has an associate's degree and multiple certificates in various business training programs. To you, you can call her Paula Ferguson, Mrs. Ferguson, but to me, I will be calling her Mom. Mom, thank you so much for being here this evening. It's so great. I thought it was really important that that I have you with us and that you speak as a... I call you Mom. I hate when people tell me about my stepmother, but, you know, I'm not your biological son, but I know that I'm still your son and you're still my mom. So I wanted you to speak about your perspective and to tell us a little bit about yourself as well.
Great. Well, I am happy to share the stories from your childhood. I'm sure your audience is listening keenly.
Yes.
But I'm really happy you asked, and it's my pleasure to be here. And I'll share as much as you need me to.
Okay. So let's start off with the big one. What is motherhood for you? And how would you define it?
Motherhood for me has been the act of creating and caring for a family. And that creating of a family came by my joining my life with your father. So you are not a biological child, but you are still my son because we made a commitment to you. We made a commitment to each other. We need a commitment to you. So even though our family is not genetically connected, it was born out of a very strong love that I had for your dad and later for you. And I think love is the basis for starting a family, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, form or shape that family takes. I think wanting to share yourself with your partner, by creating a family is like the ultimate sharing because you are sharing your genetic material to create, you know, a gift to humankind. You're creating another being. So however that sharing comes about, it still becomes a family. Mm-hmm. And so motherhood for me was creating and caring, built together, mm-hmm. you know. I think families come in all shapes and form, and the basis of that is just going to be that you love each other.
That's the ideal. That's what you're supposed to do, right? Because we way too often hear the story about the wicked stepmother or the wicked stepfather, and I can say on the air that is not what I lived. I mean, we've had our times when we butt heads, but I mean, who doesn't butt heads at some point?
Well, you butt heads whether you are genetically joined or not.
Exactly.
What it boils down to is, and I don't understand the wicked stepmother or the you know, the stepfather concept. I'm not sure. That maybe came from one of these Disney fairy tales, probably. I don't know.
It is definitely like a part of the Cinderella mythos. But I mean, it's also a reality that people have lived. Like, oftentimes when a new parent comes in, maybe that new parent is not really compatible with the child. Like, they may be quote-unquote compatible with the parent, but they're not compatible with the child, and the child rebels. Because everybody brings their own baggage into a relationship. And so, if they haven't healed from whatever trauma coming in, there's jealousy, there's resentment, there's a whole bunch of stuff that might occur that causes intense conflict, you know? And there are some not nice people out there as well, unfortunately.
Well, yes, that is true, and I get your reasoning. For me, the basis is gonna be love. I cannot imagine being, and like I said, maybe my experience is pretty different from everybody else's, because I just happened to have met somebody who I loved very deeply and who returned that love. Mm-hmm. And so I could not translate or transfer that to his child and yeah. to other aspects of his life. So I might not have been a photographer, but I took a keen interest in photography and a keen interest in what, you know, his work was. And so for me, you are an extension of him, and therefore I would want to bring that sort of love and that sort of giving and caring to you as well.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's kind of my perspective. Yeah. Naive, probably, but I've lived it. And so.
And it worked.
And it worked. It worked for me.
Right.
It worked for me.
Right.
Yeah.
How was it? No, let's go to the other question first. Did you have any expectations going into the relationship with a single father? Because we've discussed this quite in depth over the last year or so, and mm-hmm. you said that my father was very like upfront from day one. He told you, "Listen, I have a boy, and he's priority. He's top priority for me." So what right. were some of your expectations going into the relationship with a single father?
I kind of got a package deal, you know. If you're accepting me, I come with a son, mm-hmm. and, you know, so it's a package deal, you know.
Right.
You can, the choice is mine to be a part of this couple family experience, but there was no negotiating about his responsibilities as a father and as a role model to you. So, you know, this is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
And like you said, he was pretty upfront about it from, and I'm like talking, we met in September, and he, I knew this from probably the second date, mm-hmm. you know. I knew when he was coming to spend Christmas with you, he told me I have to be in Montreal to spend Christmas with my son. And so he was very clear about what you meant to him, who you were and what you meant to him.
Mm-hmm.
To say that I had any expectations, no, the fact that he was a single father didn't matter. I admired the care and concern he had for you and how he managed his responsibilities as a father. You know, I saw that over time. It was very clear from the outset how he felt about being a father.
Mm.
If anything, his behavior demonstrated that he would have been a great partner to have a family with.
Right.
Because he wanted to make sure that he took care of his offspring and not just take care of you from a financial perspective. It was, how do I groom this person? How do I mentor this person? What values do I pass on to this person, this little me? And that was pretty important to him,
right?
You know. So I didn't have any real expectations, and I think a part of it is I was very young,
mm-hmm.
so I had no idea whatsoever what
right.
could go wrong.
Right. And that was also pre-social media. This was pre, like being in Jamaica, there were not as many, it wasn't as much access to like movies and stuff like that. So,
and information in general.
Right.
So
you just had to live the experience.
You had to live the experience. There wasn't anything to benchmark or any 10-point plan or, you know, you really had to live the experience and learn to manage it, mm-hmm. you know, as a new aspect of that experience presents itself, then you figure it out, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I didn't go in with any preconceived ideas or any expectations. I had just met this person that I wanted to be with. I enjoyed his time, his presence. I would say that we enjoyed each other's presence, and you were a part of that. You know, you're a part of that that family, that what he came with.
Yeah.
And so I made that a part of who I was as well.
In other words, there was no question.
No, I was doing love. I was doing love. Still out.
Amazing. And how was it? Because your family, your mom, it was basically a clan of women. You know, your mom and your two sisters, like your younger sister, I think by that time you were either on your way out of the house, but it was really a clan of women, young women together. And now you're entering where you have two males. So how was it being a stepmom to a young boy, having lived mostly with women?
Well, you wear clothes around the house. Well, the truth of the matter is that I grew up as a part of an extended family. Okay. So I had a lot of male cousins and male uncles and so they did have some time having men around. I didn't grow up with my dad, and so I don't know what that feels like to have mm-hmm. a father figure in the house, you know, but I have had male presence. I am not sure if I don't think I recall any difficulties. I think one of the things that we probably had to adjust is how we displayed affection for each other.
Okay.
Because we had a small child with us, but we still held hands. I think you can probably remember that. We mm-hmm. still hugged. So there was still affection. We managed what we would say around you.
Yeah. I remember that vividly, like when you would be upset about something or dad would be upset about something, like, Kim, go to your room. I would, after maybe 20 minutes or so, I would come back and knock on the door and say, can I come out? No. And
yes, like, yes.
No, give us a few more minutes. Or, right, yeah, sure, right. You can come. Yeah.
Yeah. So we would not have certain conversations in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that was being mad with each other or discussion around business or, you know, there are just some conversations that are adult conversations that you would be sent to your room so we could talk.
Right.
And
was this like a conscientious decision, or it was like in the moment you were like, oh, no, children shouldn't hear this? So, like, was this like you guys discussed it prior and then executed, or was it like just a natural inclination?
No, it was a natural inclination for both of us. And that's kind of the thing when you meet someone that you fit with, because you know, you have similar values.
Right.
And you express things in a similar way. Mm-hmm. And so it was a natural inclination that there are some things that just you're not prepared for, yeah. you know.
Yeah.
At your age, it's not information that you need to have. You would not be able to process it.
Right.
And so I think as you got older, we shared more with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we couldn't really send you to your room at 25.
No.
But I think as you got older and you were able to understand more, and so we would share more with you, would discuss things with you, discuss things in front of you. Even if we had a disagreement, you would see some of that. But the disagreements were not, you know, crazy. No. You know, they were not physical. They were not abusive. They were just disagreements.
Yeah.
And so you saw some of that as you got older. But no, we did not sit and said, well, this is how we want to raise Kim. I remember taking a decision. There were certain values that we wanted to pass on to you. There were certain things that I wanted to pass on to you. But I also remember taking a conscious decision to take myself out of discussions that revolved around your mother and your dad.
Right.
That family that existed before me. So I took myself out of those discussions. I didn't participate. If there was something happening, I would listen. And if your father needed to discuss it with me, then I would actively participate in that discussion.
Right.
I remember taking myself out of...
Here's the thing.
I have friends who don't even know that I suffer from depression.
Why don't they know?
Because I'm scared they'll ostracize me if they know, and then they'll abandon me. I don't want to be alone.
You're discriminated against when you have a mental illness. With other illnesses, there's compassion.
It doesn't take much to be diagnosed mentally ill.
Due to an outburst, I was diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic. And now the doctors say it's something else.
20% of people and counting have had or will have a depression.
People throw different labels around. You're this or you're that.
Everybody psychoanalyzes someone during a conversation.
You have a right to express emotions.
Anger, love, hate, sadness, confusion. It does not mean you're ill.
If you're down and out, seek help. Don't be scared. It can be very intimidating.
There are people listening and willing to help.
We have to innovate.
Get informed. Contact your local CLSC, Sun Youth, and in Quebec, Ford House, or Prevention Suicide.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and as I said at the top of the hour, we are doing a special this month whereby we are honoring mothers, a variety of mothers. So we had young mothers, we had mothers with grown teenagers, we have grandmothers as well. And we have stepmom, my mother, Paula Ferguson. Mom. Yeah. I'm so grateful that you're here. I'm so grateful that we're having this conversation because, again, I feel like it not very often do we hear stepmothers' perspectives. So before the break, we were talking about the expectations and like how it was being a stepmother to a young boy, and you kind of what I really enjoyed is that you kind of were just like, this is a package deal, and if I love the man, I have to love the son as well, period. And like you, myself, and my dad have had this discussion often because I tended to find women who were mothers in my life. And I remember distinctly you said to me at one point, Kim, I think you need to examine why you keep on leaning towards. And I was like, but it's not like I have a sheet of paper and I say, hey, and I go around to each woman. I say, hey, do you have children? This one says no. And I cross them off the list. It just kind of happened. But when I do go into a relationship and there is a child on their side, on the woman's side of it, I always had the same inclination, the same mindset of, if I love that woman, therefore I love their child as my own.
And
like I carry that with me through any relationship. And I mean, as you get older, it's like I'm not trying to find at 42 years old someone who is half my age. Like, I just don't want to have, like, that's not something that I'm aiming for. So likely I'm aiming for someone who's around my age or maybe a little bit younger, and most likely they're going to have a child, because between ages of 30 and 45 is when most people either have had children or they're starting families, you know.
Right.
Regardless. So loving that child is just natural. And I mean, if you want to have a healthy relationship with the person that you're with and the child is present,
it goes without saying.
Yeah. Did you have any concerns or fears going into it? Or that came up later on?
I didn't have any fear, and I think I was at that age. You don't have too many fears because, like we discussed earlier, you don't have anything to benchmark it against. You have not seen it go terribly wrong. You have not seen it go terribly right, or maybe. Probably that's not entirely true, because my youngest sister, her dad was my stepdad.
Yeah.
And he treated us really, really well. Mm. I have very fond memories of him, getting my books together for school. Mm. I would receive my books right at the end or the start of summer holidays. And he would often say to me that you need to make sure that you have gone through these books at least 50% by the time the next semester starts.
Wow.
So he instilled in me a love of knowledge and just books and reading, it might have been there, but he really, really
nurtured it.
Yes, he nurtured it. And so for me, having had a stepfather myself, special for me, actually, because I consider him my father,
right?
And so I've seen where that whole step-parent, relationship works pretty well. And right. So I probably, without thinking about it, in fact, I'm just really connecting the dots now that I'm talking
exactly.
to you.
Yeah.
Saying that I saw it work And so fear, I had no real fear. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd come from.
Right.
And like I say, the basis for everything in my life has been, you know, how do I love? How do I share? Am I being kind to this person? Mm-hmm. Am I really living my own values? So that's what I believe to be true about myself. And so that's what I'm living.
Right.
Right. I think as time progressed, I think one of the things that I found challenging was building a relationship with your mom.
Right.
Because even though we are both Caribbean women, we come from very vastly different backgrounds.
Yep.
And, you know, our language is different. Everything is different about how we were raised.
Your culture, your language, generationally as well.
Generationally, we are different. Right. Yeah. Right. So, building a relationship with your mom was probably the most difficult part of it. Like, and your mom insisted, actually, mm-hmm. because she's like, well, you have my son. I kind of need to know what's happening. So she would talk to your dad, and your dad would, you know, they would talk. They would share information about what was happening with you. And then she would want to talk to me. And I'm like, why do you need to talk to me? You just got all the information you need.
Yeah.
And so I think that was perhaps the most challenging for me. But your mom is a pretty cool person, so she doesn't really have any hang-ups, none that I knew of anyway.
Right.
And so she was very warm and very, very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't any animosity, no arguments. You know, we just really wanted to make sure that you were okay.
Yeah.
And so I actively participated in building a relationship with her,
mm-hmm.
Which I think was, in the long run, it really was the best, in your best interest and in our best interest as a family.
Yeah.
She is your mother, and she was a part of your father's life for many years, and so the family extended to include her.
Yes.
You know, and your dad also, your dad didn't have anything to say like, no, this is not a great idea, whatever worked, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, at the end of it was really about how do we ensure that you get what's best for you.
Right.
And that was what was best for you. So that, I think, was perhaps the most challenging part of it. And then, you know, the other part of it would have been, you know, having you sort of warm to the idea that, you know, your life is changing.
Yeah.
I'm there now. And I think that was the other difficult part of it.
So what were some of the difficulties that arose from that?
I think it was a lot of change for a 7-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a lot of change, you know. I think the first part of it had to do with helping you to understand that I was not a part of your parents' undoing.
Mm-hmm.
They undid themselves entirely by themselves.
Yes.
You know, I think it's really hard for a 7-year-old to understand that. You know, and then you're moving from Montreal to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big move, you know. Getting you settled was challenging. Getting you to see that, you know, I just happened to have come along at a point where your parents were separating. or had separated.
Yeah.
I was on the back end of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so managing your or helping you to develop a perspective around that, I think was pretty challenging.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of the difficulty too was that you now had this other woman, there was this other person in your dad's life. So it wasn't just Kim and Dad.
Yeah.
It was Dad and Paula and Kim.
Yeah.
So now you are moving from, you know, it's a simple thing, but you're moving from riding in the front seat of a Jeep with your dad.
Yep.
To riding in the back seat of the Jeep because there is this new person in the front seat beside your dad.
Yeah.
And to a young child, that can seem like I'm losing importance in my father's life.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way under the sun that a 7-year-old is going to read that we're building a new family.
Yeah.
Nah, yeah. That would not have registered to you at all. And so I learned to manage some of your anger, some of your annoyance, some of your displacement.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably a pretty difficult time for us as a family, you know, and, you know, you're trying to develop this bond.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a child that is saying, nah, I don't want to have this bond. What are you talking about? You know, I don't want to have this bond. I want my mother and I want my father.
Yeah.
I don't know who you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you find ways around that. And part of my way around that was, you know, I hosted your 8th birthday party.
Yep.
And we got all your friends together or, you know, children of our friends at that time who were around your age or a little younger.
Yeah.
And we had a little birthday party for you. And I remember when you walked into the house, you're like, it's not my birthday. And I'm like, it's tomorrow. Your birthday is tomorrow. My birthday is tomorrow. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, we're going to have it today.
Mm-hmm. But also, I remember, like, I was just completely terrified because I remember extremely vividly that day, and I'm grateful to that day for that day. But, like, I remember asking my dad, where's Paula? Where's Paula? Why is the house closed? Why is the house closed? And, like, walking into the house, you know, when the house is closed, you're not expecting people. And so all of these people are there, and I just remember feeling completely terrified and then just going, what is... But, like, my first thing was, it's not my birthday. It was, like, kind of like a defense mechanism because I was so scared from like, this experience. And I was, like, I remember feeling worried about where were you? Because, like, the house is locked up. That's not normal, mm-hmm. you know?
Right, we're usually together all the time.
Yeah, and, like, if I was very grateful for living in Jamaica because our house, our front door was always open, you know. So, like, the front door is closed. The windows are closed. Everything is closed. Like, we're in Garden Town. Like, Paula is supposed to be here. This doesn't make any sense. So, my brain was in a different place completely. So, like, my instinctive reaction, unfortunately, as a 8-year-old was not the best. But from my perspective, it was like I was extremely worried about you. And then I had, like, I guess a bit of anxiety, I guess you could call it, because I remember saying to Dad, where's Paula? And he was just kind of, he had this tiny little smirk on his face. And he's like, let's go inside. No. And I'm just like, but where is Paula? Because I don't understand, you know?
Yeah.
But
it was a lot of fun to organize that party for you. I remember talking to your dad about that and saying, you know, we should have a party for Kim, and, you know, it would sort of help to warm him up to the environment, and, you know, just us being together. And and it's kind of a nice to do something it's nice to do something for someone else, yeah, and have them enjoy that experience. And as it turned out, that birthday party, it sort of became etched in our memories. It's mm-hmm. one of our more pleasant, you know, sort of early memories of us sort of bonding.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my first foray into birthday parties, you know.
Right.
But it and I remember, you know, making those, you know, in Jamaica, we used to do this maraschino cherry and cheddar cheese sort mm-hmm. of pick thing.
In the
and
grapefruits.
I remember, yeah, my mom had done that, you know, when I was a kid and we would have a party or something, she would make those mm-hmm. for us. And I really enjoyed having that. And so I sort of pulled things from my own childhood to create that party. And we ordered your cake and it was a really nice bonding experience. And of course we had the young children the children of our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it sort of introduced you to, you know, all the kids that were a part of our life and helped you to build some friendships out of that, you know,
yeah,
having just come from Montreal a few months earlier.
Yeah.
So, you know, we look back at the pictures and now, you know, 33, 34 years later, and I'm grateful that we made that decision and created a really special moment for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it felt good to do,
yeah,
and I'm really glad that we did it.
But then also, there was the added caveat of Hurricane Gilbert was on the way.
Oh yeah,
at that time, like I think Gilbert was coming the next day or
the following evening,
in the next
yeah.
2 days.
But of course I was not into the news at the time. Mm. I was not listening to that.
Right.
I was just focused on my birthday party for you. So, you know, but I think being a step parent at that time meant having to deal with your anger. And I suspect a lot of step parents might say that. You have to, the child, you know, is going to go through a lot of change.
Yeah.
I mean, even as adults, we have challenges dealing with change and the rate of change as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you often don't get an opportunity to be comfortable with something before something else happens and
yeah,
you are required to adjust
yeah
again. And so if you look at it even from a perspective of an adult, you know, think about what that move does to a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old. You're changing their family structure. You're changing where they live. You know,
mm-hmm,
they're coming into a different culture. It's a lot.
Yeah.
And so, whatever you can do to make that a little smoother or a little easier,
mm-hmm,
then you do. You know, but it has to be difficult on them. And I know it was difficult on you, and it was difficult on me. I did what I thought at the time to be the right thing for us, and I think it worked pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea how it would pan out.
Yeah.
But you live the experience and you go with it. And like I say, I just did what I thought to be the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to my second mother, Paula Ferguson, and we're just talking, this is a part of the series that we're doing this month for Black Mothers, and we're going to take a quick break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
To to be held in your captivity. I am ready for love, all of the joy and the pain, and all the time that it takes just to stay. Just need you to acknowledge I am here. If you give me half a chance, I'll prove this to you. I will be patient, kind, faithful, and true to a man who loves music.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and today's show is a part of our series dedicated to mothers for this month of May. And my stepmother, my mother, my mom is here all the way from Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica, by way of Miami, Florida. No, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, talking to us via Zoom this evening. My mom has been an entrepreneur, started up her own company, Because Gifts and Gourmet, joined my father managing his company, Photo Workshop. She was the managing director, so she worked in production, craft services, food styling. They started a magazine together. It's a beautiful magazine. I believe was 6 issues long, like did right. 6 issues with Ken LaCruz, yourself and my father. I think y'all were mm-hmm. That was a trifecta at the time, if memory serves me correctly. Started up a company called Details Production Agency, which specialized in giving training seminars, public relations, and facilitated corporate business needs. And then went on to changing Because Gifts and Gourmet to All Wrapped Up. Opened up an airport store at the Norman Manley International Airport called Two Hampers and Min and Mule. And then sprinkle in somewhere around there, starting up Studio Art Gallery, which was my father's brainchild, where it was a gallery. And also you could rent out the dark rooms. There was 2 dark room stations, I believe, in the dark room section. Mm-hmm. Mom, thank you so much for being here, for having this conversation.
No problem.
There was a moment for me when, because this was unusual, especially for mm-hmm. I find for Caribbean family. I called every one of you by your first name. So my dad was Peter, my mother was Nadine, and you were Paula. And that was that was for almost all my life until I left the nest. And then at some point mm-hmm. when I moved to Canada to study cinema and to study, well, no, I had finished studying theater in Jamaica, and so I wanted to study cinema, and I started doing my poetry more. Something clicked in my brain and said, no, you can't be talking to these people and calling them Peter, Paula, and Nadine. Like, that needs to stop. There's something in my brain that was like, okay, we've done this for 20 years. It was a fun experiment. We need to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question to you is, was there a moment for you when I went from being a stepson to a son? Because you also talk about me as if I'm your son and not... Like, the step is just a formality as far as I'm concerned. But was mm-hmm. there a moment where you were like, this is my son?
Ah, that's a pretty good question. I'm not sure. I know you've shared with me when you finally decided, you know, you're going to call us dad and mom. And I remember we had a conversation about you calling me mom and me not responding because it was just so unusual for you to call me mom. You know, I'm so used to calling you referring to me as Paula. Mm-hmm. And so when you did it the first time, I didn't respond at all. I don't even think I heard you. For me, I'm not sure if there is that one moment in time. I remember there was a point in high school mm-hmm. where you had a fight with someone, or you know, you ended up in as a part of this fight.
Yeah.
And I think they had to. I don't remember you. Had to get some medical attention.
Yeah, it was recommended that I go to the hospital because the guy had basically beaten up my face. And right. wanted to make sure that I had no internal damage or something like that.
Right, right. And I remember at that point being extremely worried. I also remember a point where you remember that time when you drove your dad's Jeep
mm-hmm.
and crashed it?
Yes. Yeah.
So I remember being really, really worried. You know, I remember when you called and I answered the phone and I could hardly hear what you're saying, but I know I made out crash and you were a part of it, and I was getting dressed for us to leave because we were at home.
Yeah.
And I said it to your dad, and we sort of flew out the house to come to you. And I remember the fear that I had that day. I had no idea what was happening with you. But I remember being very fearful of losing you and of, you know, you being in a situation that I had no control over and, mm-hmm. and we couldn't help you. And, you know, that was a really scary time. I can remember those two moments. And it's not that you don't take ownership of your role as a mother, a stepmother, you know, whichever term you're more comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a, there's a buildup where you, over the years, you know, where you move from being the child of the person you're having a relationship with to being a child that needs to be cared for. And you're building a relationship with this individual.
Yeah.
And after a while, it really doesn't matter how you came to being.
Yeah.
Just the fact that you are.
Right.
You're present.
Yeah.
And that I had built a relationship with you of my own.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't now that you were the son of this gentleman that I was seeing. It was that I had built a relationship with you and mm-hmm. that I was in part responsible for you.
Yeah.
And it grows.
Mm-hmm.
you know, it builds, and I think it just transitioned, probably without me making a definitive statement,
right?
You know, to myself or to anyone else for that matter,
right?
To say, well, this is my son. You feel it. Mm-hmm. It just happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I'm your mom.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it just clicks, and the bottom line is that you have to really build that relationship, you know, the relationship that we build.
Yeah.
Because you can care for somebody, their physical needs, but if you have not built that relationship that withstands the test of time as ours have,
mm-hmm.
Then you probably don't move from being a stepchild to just a child, our child,
yeah.
You know? And so there isn't one definitive moment, but
mm-hmm.
I think the love for that individual grows.
Mm-hmm.
My love for you have grown. I am concerned about you. I'm particularly concerned about you. You know, now that your father isn't here, I'm like, you guys had such a close relationship, and I know you talk about everything, you know, and mm-hmm. there are some parts of it that you share with me that he doesn't know anything about, you know, we have our own thing going.
Yeah.
And so it just happens.
Yeah. I remember, for me, I have one of those memories that I share with you as like a moment where I was like, this woman loves me. And then there was another one, which it wasn't as like dramatic or anything like that. But I remember I was working for you guys one summer, and you put me in the kitchen and you had me sorting through bills. So there was bills that were paid for with, I believe it was NCB checks, and bills that were paid for with workers' bank checks.
Okay.
And you had me going through...
I remember
specifically. And you had me going through this big pile of bills, and I had to separate the workers' bank from the NCB. And I think maybe that's why to this day I hate doing my taxes, because I look at the big bag of receipts that I have to go through. And I'm like, Lord Jesus, I don't want to do this. But I remember, like, I was just there. And at the time, I think that was when Dad was still renting the place. So there was no AC in the kitchen yet. And it was hot and sweaty. And I was just there bent over these things and looking at the handwriting and trying to decipher what was workers' bank. And I remember I came out of the kitchen and came into the hallway where the entrance is, and you had come out. I don't know if you were going outside or something, but you saw me and you were like, you had so much sympathy for me, because I think on my face I was just defeated by these bills, separating these bills, and you hugged me. And you were like, Hoshier, I know you seem really tired and thing, and I just remember feeling like, okay, this woman actually really cares for me, you know. And then the fight at George's, because I was going to St. George's College, which is a high school. We call high schools college for some reason in Jamaica. I don't really know what that is, but in Canada, college is like tertiary level education.
Right,
so
right.
It's a very strange thing to, I'm sure,
well,
to folks.
What can I tell you? We're Jamaicans and we're special.
Exactly. And but what I remember from that is when I was in the hospital bed, when we were waiting to go so that I could be examined by the doctor. We were waiting outside, and there was, I think, two teachers and a student. I don't know if you guys had gotten to talking, but the male teacher started chuckling. And you kind of looked at him and were like, well, what's funny? And he's like, well, you know, I've seen way worse than this. And I don't remember if you responded to him, but I remember that there was a very visceral, energetic, F off kind of protective energy around me, like, what the hell are you talking about? And then when I was in the hospital bed, you stayed by the bed and you were holding my hand. And I think at some point, I think you actually started crying, if I yes. remember correctly. And yes. I was actually comforting you.
That's quite possible.
That's I'm going to be okay. I'm okay. You know, I'm okay. And Dad, that was the darkest I've ever seen my father energetically. He was like, I don't remember him saying anything. I don't recall him saying anything.
No.
When we had that meeting with the dean of discipline, the boy that I got into a fight with, and you and Dad were all in that room, like, I tried to make myself as small as possible in that room. And I remember Dad sitting there cross, his arms crossed, and I vaguely feel like you were the one doing most of the communicating. Because I felt like Dad was just, he was about to explode.
I remember that he was very angry. And I don't think he's not the kind of person that you know, argues too much or, you know, quarrels. Or he gets very stern, mm-hmm. very dark and, you know, I can't remember. I'm sure he would have said his piece.
Yeah.
I can't recall what it is, but I do remember him being extraordinarily upset.
Yeah.
Like, how could this happen in a high school? Well, certainly at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was our first experience with that, and we don't know of you, what Jamaicans would call a troublemaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't your personality. You know, you weren't getting into the middle of fights and things. So the whole experience was very unusual.